The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Okay, water lovers, especially those in the Berkshires and the rest of the world, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm your super water man, ambassador for water, where all things are blue and aquamarine. Straight from Pittsfield to all around our big blue planet. In the abundance. From Pittsfield Community Radio 89.7 WTBR-FM. Pittsfield, and then 88.1 WSBR and Lee, and anywhere you can get your podcasts from. Going to see posters all around the region. You're going to want to go to that QR code, become a subscriber, share it with your water-loving friends, and you know, the water conversation, culture, and all that, deep water talk, some news, some comedy, all water related. Straight from Pittsfield to all around the world, super psyched to do it for all our water-loving fans around the world. We got some good tunes coming your way, and great interview today with Brian Joseph, who is a veterinarian for fishies and sea mammals, and super psyched. He's also a veteran as well in the U.S. Army. So veterinarian for fish and other sea life. So stay tuned for his interview, second half of the show. Stay tuned. He's really, really cool interview. And get into quite a few different details about how to save marine mammals and how to be a doctor for fishies, and really kind of cool about that. We got some Beatles with Rain, which much of the United States has been deluged in, especially the Northeast, especially the last few days. So a little rain from the Beatles.
Yeah. like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me.
You got Brad Pitt, but we got Keanu Reeves. But we got the best lake fishing, you best believe. Yeah, you make fun of us cause we spell color with a U. You think you're all that, Mr. Red, White, and Blue. We say hey, you say y'all. Yeah, we both got pro football. All your TV. You got a stronger armor down there, but men up here, we got stronger beer. You got Dunkin' Donuts, we got Timmy's. We got more land, but bro, you got more cities. You sure love the MLB, any NBA. But to the great white north, hockey is the only game. Hey, we say A, you say y'all. Yeah, we both got pro football. Except we got pitch balls and a long field. We say Z, you say Z. Sure, we watch on your TV. You got a strong. Southern neighbor, all kidding aside, it takes me 6 beers to get pissed drunk, but for you, it takes 9, sucker. We say A, you say y'all, yeah, we both got pro football. Except we got big balls in along the field. We say Z, watch all your TV. You got a stronger armor down there, men up here. We got strong beer. Yeah, we got strong beer. Whoa, we got strong beer. Yeah, we do, baby.
You are listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Your one and only water center for all kinds of water culture, coming straight from the Berkshires to all around the world. Super psyched to be with you today to share some more water love. We started off with Rain, a remastered version by the Beatles. And then a second Beatles water-related song, Across the Universe. And then, of course, we just had a third and wonderful song from Canada, Stronger Beer. You know, they do have great lake fishing, but that beer is also water. So you want to actually notice where water touches our lives. So could it be beer? Could it be lake fishing? Could it be Across the Universe? You don't know, we don't know, but that's what's so cool about water, because we really don't know. We don't know that we don't know that we don't know. We're kind of all dammed up around water, and that's why the culture of water is so important. Brought to you right here from Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR and Lee, and anywhere you can get your podcast from. You want to like, share, and subscribe, and share it with your water-loving friends and let them know that they could subscribe to a podcast coming from your area, because water, we have a say in how it goes. And kind of like that spoonful of sugar helping the medicine go down. Super psyched about that. Quick PSA, on July 28th at the Berkshire Athenaeum, there's going to be a huge EPA presentation on the possibility of cleaning up some of those PCBs that lie within vernal pools in our region. And you're going to want to be there and really start to get in on having butts in seats and finding out about all these forever chemicals and how we're going to clean them up, because we are going to clean them up, and perhaps even discuss some of the work of Donna Bedard. Donna Bedard, who is part of the Bedard Auto Group family, who worked for GE Labs in 1985, who found the locally occurring microbe that eats PCBs for lunch. She worked for GE Labs, and quickly GE and all their wisdom, they shut down GE Labs and has been sitting on the solution for 41 years. How's that? Isn't that great? Nothing like resisting, moving forward, and doing what's needed and wanted. And at that event, over at the Berkshire Athenaeum, you're going to want to go. It's, I think it's from 5 to 7 p.m. Everybody is invited. Come on down and let's free the science for ourselves, our neighbors, and our region, and then show how that could be done around the world. Bioremediation is a future that we could all live into, and I'll have a little bit more about that right now, because in a couple of days, it's actually going to be International Bog Day, and we're going to talk a little bit about that right now. But here's the bottom line. In about 10 minutes, we are going to have a really great guest. His name is Brian Joseph, and he's going to talk about how to heal fishes and mammals. He's a veterinarian for a variety of different aquariums around the world, and he's going to be sharing with us a little bit about how to take care of sea life as a veterinarian. So super psyched to have that perspective be part of our great family of water lovers. They get to hear about that. But here, first, a little something about International Bog Day. International Bog Day is actually celebrated on the fourth Sunday in July to raise awareness about critical importance of peatlands, fens, not really sure what that is, and swamps. It highlights how these unique ecosystems mitigate climate change, store vast amounts of carbon, and support rare biodiversity. And also, they clean up the water supply. They are filters. Established in Scotland, of course, in 1991, Bog Day is now widely celebrated across North America and across Northern Europe. These overlooked environments act as environmental multitaskers by buffering floods, filtering drinking water, and keeping carbon locked in the soil. And since in this region you can celebrate by visiting protected wetlands and fen regions in the area, local nature centers and state parks often host guided tours or walks around regional peatlands and bogs. And you gotta love the bog. Don't get bogged down in the bog. But a little bit more about something from the Pew Research Center. Five things you probably didn't know about bogs. Let's go through those five. And they are, number one, giant carbon vaults. Bogs consist of layers of partially decomposed plants, mostly moss, and depend on rain and snow rather than groundwater like many other peatlands for their water supply. Their tea-colored acidic waters slow organic decay almost to a standstill, locking carbon in place and preventing it from being released into the atmosphere. Peatlands, including bogs, cover only about 3% of the planet, but they store a third of land-based carbons. Number two thing that you didn't know about bogs. They are natural water filters. Wow. All that moss doesn't just trap carbon. It also captures pollutants. As water seeps through bogs, sediments and contaminants are filtered out, supporting safer drinking water and healthier rivers and lakes by keeping surrounding feeder waterways cleaner. So if you're thinking of filling in a bog or a swamp, just don't do it, because you want water for you and your family and other people's families. Okay, number three, they can help keep wildfires and floods in check. Bogs absorb vast quantities of rainwater and release it into the surrounding landscape, gradually making them an effective buffer against flooding during heavy storms. Healthy bogs also act as natural fire breaks. And number four, they're living time capsules. Wow, what's that all about? Bogs preserve things, sometimes eerily well, from ancient pollen to century-old artifacts to the macabre fascinated bog bodies. These ecosystems, waterlogged, low-oxygen soils, are usually good at conserving traces of the past, which can help scientists understand civilizations and ecosystems and climates that have changed over time. So those people who are looking for a way to beat aging, rather than cryotherapy, just put yourself in a bog. See how that goes. They're more fragile, number five, than they may seem. Although they may appear timeless, bogs depend on delicate balance of acidic water, low nutrients, and waterlogged peat moss slowly formed over millennia. Draining them for farming or development, harvesting peat, or diverting their waterways can dry them out, causing them to release their stored carbon and releasing their vulnerability to wildfires. Even subtle disturbances, such as foot traffic or nutrient changes caused by fertilizer runoff, sewage, or varying rainfall, can lead to lasting damage. So, as you know, like now, bogs serve a very important role. And you could find more of this at the Pew Research Organization. Going to pew.org, pew.org. And five things you probably didn't know about bogs, but now you know. Super psyched to be with you. Going to be bringing on Brian Joseph any minute now, so stay tuned for that. Great interview. But in the meantime, here's a little something from our friend Bruce Lee.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stumble road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. Almost over and the summer's coming, the days are getting long. Waited all winter for the time to be right, just to take you along. Baby, get ready. And it don't matter if we sit forever and the fish don't bite. We'll jump in a river and cool ourselves from the heat of the night. Hold on through.
Well, here I am in my tubby again, and my tubby's all filled with water and nice fluffy suds. And I've got my soap and washcloth to wash myself, and I've got my nifty scrub brush to help me scrub my back, and I've got a big fluffy towel to dry myself when I'm done. But there's one other thing that makes tubby time the very best time of the whole day. And do you know what that is? It's a very special friend of mine, my very favorite little pal.
Oh, rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Bo, bo, bo-dee-o, rubber ducky, joy of joys. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby, rubber ducky, you're so fine, and I'm lucky that you're mine. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
Hey, rubber ducky, would you like me to scrub your back with my nifty little scrub brush? You would? Okay, how's this? Hey, you want me to scrub behind your ears? Oh, I see. You don't have any ears, do you? Well, how about your tummy? Scrub his little ducky tummy. Ooh, he's ticklish. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby, rubber ducky, you're so fine, and I'm lucky that you're mine. Rubber ducky, I'd like a whole pond of rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
Look, here he comes now. Let's ask him.
Hey, Murray, is it true Betty's wearing your ring?
Mm-hmm. Who's that banging on the piano?
I don't know.
You going out with her tonight?
You bet your fur.
By the way,
where'd you meet her?
I met her one day at the laundromat.
She turned around and smiled at me. You get the picture?
Yes, we see. And that's when I fell in love with the leader of the laundromat.
I'll never forget the hurt and the funny look in her eye. She grabbed my laundry and ran into the street, directly into the path of a runaway garbage truck. I yelled, "Watch out! Watch out! Watch out! Watch out!"
Dang it.
Kissed her goodbye.
What's that banging on the piano?
I don't know.
You are listening to the only rock and roll show for water called And So It Flows, where we're bringing the water culture from the Pittsfield center of the Berkshires all around our big blue globe. Super psyched to have you as friends and listeners, and super psyched to be able to bring the kind of culture of water and the voice for water that probably hasn't existed anywhere before. Yeah, there's science. Yeah, there's all that good stuff about data, environmental. But you know where? What about laundry songs? What about songs about fishing? What about being able to go across the universe and listening to Ernie speak about rubber duckies? Super psyched. Let's get into water and not just into water. You know, you want to get into water. It's like if you are a self-professed geek, be proud of your geekdom. Be proud of that which has you be passionate, because that's what brings us aliveness. Something that you are purposeful and passionate about. It could be anything. And if you have some stuff that you want to bring to the airwaves via radio, television, some kind of podcast, something, come on over to WTBR and speak to the programming committee. And you can do it yourself. Also, PCTV as well. Same building, programming committee there. See if you could bring forth your cultural shift. And that's what makes it so exciting. So like, subscribe, share it with your water-loving friends. We are here for you and here for the H2O. Got a great interview coming up right now with Dr. Brian Joseph, a veterinarian turned author, sharing his wisdom on animal welfare, marine life welfare, and education from a lifetime experience. Super psyched to bring him on, and here we go. Is it working? It's not working. Let's see why. I don't know why. Don't know why. A little technical breakdown, but we will go into this quickly and find out why. What's going on with Brian Joseph? What's going into Brian? Come on, Brian. We got you here.
So welcome. You are with And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am your waterman, your ambassador for water with And So It Flows, the only rock and roll show for water. And I'm super pleased to have today Brian Joseph, who brings a whole new world of actually something that actually works in the world. It's called being a veterinarian for aquatic animals and other things. So Dr. Brian Joseph, he hails from a small semi-agricultural town south of San Diego, where he nurtured a lifelong fascination with animals, the environment, and marine life. His extensive career spanning over five decades has led him through a variety of roles, including animal keeper, consultant, veterinarian, and executive director. His work has taken him to aquariums, dolphin facilities, museums, nature centers, and zoos across the United States, Canada, and Asia. So glad to have you. So glad that you're here. So tell us a little bit of, you know, what fascinates you in the world around marine mammals and marine life, and how do you be a vet to a fish or a dolphin?
Well, first, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. I grew up in San Diego, and I was very connected to the water. Did fishing, swimming, surfing, and I recognized very early in life that water is what keeps us all alive. And I gravitated towards taking care of animals that live in the water, as you mentioned, all those animals, but also being very concerned about water conservation. and about the conservation of fish on Earth, because right now we only have 7.6% of our Earth's waters are protected. The goal was by 2030 that we'd have 30% protected. Unfortunately, our government has been scaling that back, and right now we only protect about just over 3% of our marine water.
That's the United States. We're the ones doing 3%. Gotcha.
That's correct. We have scaled back since our present administration has eliminated many of the marine protected areas. I feel I have to say that. But in any case, so taking care of animals living in the water is obviously different. Some of it's not too different. You take care of sea lions, they come out of the water. Other is very different, taking care of bottlenose dolphins or whales or sea turtles. All that's very, very different. And I've taken that experience in zoological settings and take it in the field. And for 20 years, we were doing a study in the Indian River Lagoon in Florida and Charleston Harbor. We were doing a health and risk assessment for bottlenose dolphins. And we found that those are the sickest dolphins I've seen on Earth.
Wow.
Because of what we've done to the environment. Agricultural, effluent, sewage, antibiotics. A third of the bacteria we cultured out of the bottlenose dolphins are antibiotic resistant because of what we put in the environment. So water is what unites us all. Water is like liquid gold today. There will be wars fought over water. Right now, the Turkish government is restraining water delivery to Iran and collapsing much of their fisheries. And salt water is coming up the Tigris and Euphrates rivers and ruining their farming.
Oh, yeah. That's not to mention. So another thing about Brian that our listeners, our water-loving listeners around the world and watchers now, since we've gotten into the world of video, is that you have a military background as well.
That's correct. I'm a little bit of a zealot. I'm not a militaristic person. I'm probably the least militaristic person that was ever in the Army. And I'm probably the most defiant person. But I went into the military because I thought I could see the world and I could assess whether my thoughts about armed conflict, corruption, and greed were correct or not.
Oh, so you were like following the footsteps of Smedley Butler incognito. There you go. As a veterinarian, so you got into the military as a veterinarian. And tell our listeners and our watchers a little bit how you actually did that. Like, before we got on air, you were spelling out a 10-year defer or a waiver. What does that mean?
So that's correct. I was actually recruited by a military working dog. He was at a veterinary conference, and I don't walk by a dog without talking to him. And I listened to the recruiter, and this dog had done 4 tours in Iraq. He was retired. And I knew most of what the recruiter said to me was a big lie, but he talked about the humanitarian missions. And other than when Donald Trump is president, the Army Veterinary Corps is involved in about 75 humanitarian missions around the world every year. So that's what got my attention. And I was too old. I was maximum age was 46. I was 56 when I applied. Took 2 years to get a 10-year age waiver. And Ross Perot helped me with that. He called General Casey, Army Chief of Staff, and said, "Why won't you let this young man serve his country?" So I was almost 58 when I went through basic training.
Good old Ross Perot.
Yeah. He's a good man.
I remember his run for office. And one of the things, that vast sucking sound of the, you know, he was absolutely correct. When you show up with lower wages halfway around the world, we're going to decimate our own economy for that. So Ross Perot was absolutely spot on when he spoke of that. And, you know, he almost won, you know, give the man his due. He came out of nowhere, and not exactly nowhere, but he came out of a non-political world. And made a difference, and made a difference for aquatic animals for you and around the world for you. So, you know, again, for folks who are just tuning in, you're listening to And So It Flows, the only rock and roll show for water from Pittsfield, Massachusetts, the home of Forever Chemicals, and now looking to make a difference through the culture through this rock and roll show for water. So we're speaking with Brian Joseph, a world-renowned aquatic animal or a veterinarian. How can you actually, do you work on fish or does it have to be a mammal, or like, how can you take care of all these different kinds of, literally, do you have to lift them up out of the water? Like, what do you do? Like the physical aspect of that.
Sure. So, so I started working with aquatic animals in the 70s, and we've come a long ways. And so we do work on fish. We work on sea turtles. We work on coral. And medicine has advanced tremendously with aquatic animals. So a big part of the focus is on the environment, because just like with people, keeping you healthy by providing a good environment is much more important than any kind of clinical medicine. So we take care of the environment. A lot of what I do is monitor people's environments, tell them how to make a better aquatic environment. But sure, we do anesthesia on fish. We take blood samples on fish. We treat fish with antibiotics. We do surgery on fish. And we do that.
Can you say that last part again? It broke up.
Sure, sure. So
just the last 10 seconds. Yeah.
So we do anesthesia on fish. We do anesthesia on sea turtles. And we do surgery. We take blood samples. We do everything on fish and sea turtles and seabirds and sea mammals that we do on every other animal.
Do you have to keep them in the water or do you take them out of the water completely? And if so, how do you keep them wet?
Yeah, that's really good. You're a pretty sharp guy. With fish anesthesia, you sedate them in the water, take them out of the water, you pump anesthetic through their mouth, over their gills, and you keep them damp the entire time. So they're out of the water, but they're kept wet. Sea turtles, because they're amphibious, you can have them completely out of the water, but you've got to monitor their body temperature and keep them comfortable. So some of them we keep in the water. Whenever we move an animal, I move lots of dolphins, lots of killer whales, we keep them in the water because they're nearly weightless in the water. That's how they're designed to breathe.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. And you were also in Afghanistan where there was live fire coming at your base. And you were taking a look at like what was happening with your own. Was there ever a time that your water supply on the base was being hit by rocket propelled grenades, or was there a time where your water situation on the base was impacted?
Yeah, water is really tricky when you get into a deployed environment. Sometimes when I was in for Guatemala, for example, we would take water out of a lake and we would treat it with a reverse osmosis to purify it. Yep. And because Guatemala is a pretty violent country, one day a body floated up in the lake. So that's a concern. Afghanistan and throughout any combat area, the use of munitions contaminates the water. Not only is there not very much water, but all of the debris from the rockets, all of the petroleum, all of that contaminates the water, but there's not very much water to start with.
Yeah. I was a few months ago, I was speaking with Captain Matthew Ho, who former Marine captain, former State Department official, and we had a whole show on the Tigris and Euphrates River and the impact that our military over 30 years has had on that. One of the founding rivers of modern civilization, or river valleys, two rivers, Tigris and Euphrates. And the impact of that on people and life in that area. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing in the world is people are coming to realize the workability. Like, does it work or does it not work to constantly bomb things or constantly be in conflict for whatever, domination or like thinking that this is team building when it's actually not working. And I think we're coming to realize, you know, after there has been some level of awakening since World War II, since World War I, where we see that, like, does this actually really work? You know, and we're taking a look at that right now in Iran and that whole area. So do you have any perspectives on that? Like, do you see if does it actually work to do this? Okay. Not in the right and wrong framework, but does it actually work?
Well, about 5 years ago, my mother passed away, and I was down cleaning out her things, and I read an essay that I wrote when I was 17 years old. And that essay suggested that we're not very kind to one another and that violence does never succeed. One of the reasons I joined the military was to make the world a better place. But I also have the suspicion that the root of armed conflict is its corruption and its greed and its poverty. And having spent 10 years, most of it in the field, it confirmed it with me. That armed conflict is rarely an answer. And if we spent right now, I'm not sure how many billions of dollars that we spent in the war in Iran, but if we had spent that money collaboratively on the environment, on education, on farming, I think the world would be a better place.
Yeah. And we'd have probably more be winning friends and influencing people instead of having people either bend over backwards to the hope that we stop, like an abused, you know, relative or something like that. Or abused friend, we can actually make that difference. And I think that's a really important conscious thing to say. It's kind of like, for me, if I realize that after screaming at my kids that they start to cry, by the time I've done that for the second time, I know that doesn't work.
Right. So I can give you an example of that. One of the organizations I volunteer for is called Livestock International. And Dr. Corey Brown, the founder, and I went to Kurdistan four times over 4 years, and we trained Iraqi and Kurdish veterinarians and laboratory people in transboundary diseases and responding to disease. And at the end of one of the workshops, one of the Iraqi Arab veterinarians came up to me and he gave me a hug, kissed me on the cheek, and he said, "You've changed how I feel about Americans." So a little bit of help, a little bit of kindness goes a long ways.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. At this point, I think the military's best job would be to be handing out rice and beans and help people rebuild their houses and start to actually make amends, because it actually does take a lot of maturity to say, okay, I got it. That was me. Mm-hmm. I apologize with no loss of power. Not like, you know, there's no need to feel bad when you realize something's not working and make amends for it. That's really a high level conversation. And, you know, I'm feeling that we're ready for it. We're ready for that conversation and making restitution to all the different things that we've impacted in what people would say is a negative way. What was like the most incredible save that you've made for a marine mammal or a marine animal? Do you remember, or something that you could share with people?
Sure, sure. As I say, a lot of what I do is prevent bad things from happening. Yeah, last week I was down in Roatan teaching a marine veterinary medicine class to veterinarians and also students. And I share a lot of stories with them, and I spend more time telling them to pay things forward, make the world a better place, treat animals well, than I do on clinical medicine. But everybody thinks about clinical medicine. And certainly over the course of your career, there's some things that some animals you treat that you feel really good about. And I can think of a young male bottlenose dolphin that had a really severe pulmonary infection, and we treated him for a long time. And he finally came around. He finally came around, had a long, long life, but it was months of effort by all the people that took care of him, which that effort, that care is much more important than my contribution as a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And would you say, given that you do aquarium level things, have you seen any good practice in where there might be an aquarium or a Sea World or something where the animals are in captivity, that they go back into the wild in a safe, responsible manner? So, because when you're in captivity, you kind of lose your muscles to protect yourself and things like that.
Right, that's a really complex thing, and we'd like to think we could just turn them all loose. My entire life I've struggled with animals in captivity, and at the same time I've struggled with what we do in the wild, because that's not good either. There's been a few cases. A good friend of mine, Steve McCullough, has prepared some animals for release, some dolphins for release. It's a really difficult prospect, and if they've been in captivity very long, it's nearly impossible. The Navy did a study in about 1994-95, and I reviewed it, where they wanted to take four bottlenose dolphins, they wanted to retrain them, to put them in the wild, and they wanted to know what the possible success was. Brought a lot of biologists, veterinarians together, and we concluded it would cost about $4 million, and we had about 25% chance any of those animals would survive, because they're very, very social animals. And when they go back to the wild, they're very unkind to each other. And one of the first things that would happen, especially to a male dolphin or male killer whale, is if he approached another group, they would probably either drive him on the beach or kill him. They're very social animals, and being social is not always being kind. On the other hand, we did a lot of stranded animal recovery at SeaWorld, released a lot of pinnipeds back to the wild successfully. It's a program that SeaWorld gets very little credit for, but they invest millions of dollars every year. And we learn things from those stranded animals that we can then apply to the wild populations.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I get that. That's really great. Now, you're an author as well, right? You've written a book.
I'm a storyteller, and I've written two books. I published two dog books last year, which are about the dogs in my life over the last whole life. One was called I Wish the Rainbow Bridge Had Visiting Hours. The other was called I Wish the Rainbow Bridge Had Fewer Paw Prints. So those two dog books are out there on Amazon, and they talk about dog's role in my life, dog's role in other people's life. And I've got two army books I'm working on too. I've got a lot of books in my head, but I spend so much time volunteering, I spend too little time writing.
Yeah, got it. Any parts of that book in regarding the dog's relationship with water?
Oh yeah, it's a big part of that. One of our dogs, Bernice Mountain Dog, Annie, she and her daughter Sadie went to Coronado Beach in San Diego every week. And Annie loved to play defense on the Labradors that were retrieving. So the owners would throw something for the Labrador, and Annie would stand in front of it like a defensive back and try to keep it from getting in the water. And then she'd go out in the water. She'd go out in the water and she would go up to an object, but she wouldn't bring it back. So my lovely wife would describe that as playing catch with the water. Because Annie would run out, she'd swim, but she wouldn't retrieve.
That's so funny. And did the ball or the item actually come back through the waves, or did you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, no, of course it did. Of course it did. But she got out there one time. She got out there past the waves. And Bernese Mountain Dogs are not known to be great swimmers. And I was afraid I was going to go have to retrieve her. And I'm not the world's best swimmer either.
That's great. That's great. And for those just tuning in, we're finishing up a conversation with Brian Joseph, veterinarian for sea animals and other types of animals. And then he former military. So really great conversation. So for folks who want to find out more about your work or how to get involved with an aquarium or anything in that realm, how to become a marine veterinarian, do you have any way to contact you or a website or anything like that?
Absolutely. I have a website, and brianjoseph.org, I believe it is. And I'm really happy to answer any questions. And one of the really important things to me is mentorship, paying it forward. So if anybody wants to be a veterinarian, they want to know what marine veterinarians do, please feel free to contact me. And also for any of you out there who are veterinarians or pre-vet students, we have a wonderful nonprofit, MarVet, that specializes in training people about marine medicine.
Yeah, great. And if you love this episode and want to see more of And So It Flows, the only rock and roll show for water from Pittsfield, Massachusetts, it's that rock and roll show for water that you didn't know Pittsfield had, you can actually subscribe, like, share, and do all the things for all your water-loving friends. And just thanks again, Brian, for joining And So It Flows. Super psyched to have had a conversation with you, and we will stay in touch because I'm sure there's more to talk about in this world around sea mammals and sea animals and any kind of veterinarian work, because any animal, including the two-leggeds, we love water.
That's right. Water is it's the gold of life that keeps us going, and thank you for the opportunity. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks so much, and we're going to stop the recording here.
Rain by Edward Thomas. Rain, midnight rain, nothing but the wild rain on this bleak hut and solitude and me. Remembering again that I shall die and neither hear the rain nor give it thanks, or washing me cleaner than I have been since I was born into this solitude. Blessed are the dead that the rain rains upon. But here I pray that none whom once I loved is dying tonight, or lying still awake, solitary, listening to the rain. Either in pain or thus in sympathy, helpless among the living and the dead, like a cold water among broken reeds, myriads of broken reeds, all still and stiff, like me who have no love, which this wild rain has not dissolved, except the love of death. If love it be towards what is perfect and cannot, the tempest tells me, disappoint.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the Big Muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the Big Muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the Big Muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the Big Muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the Big Muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the Big Muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the Big Muddy, the big fool says to push on.
Well, it's not bigger than that.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled.
Super psyched to have brought you this awesome show. Thanks again, Brian Joseph, for joining And So It Flows. While you water lovers out there, think of the H2O. Think of your H2O. You're made up of at least 75%. Water, your blood is 90% water. Perhaps water has something to do with everything that we do, even when we're rolling into dew. Super psyched. Tune in, like, subscribe, and share. And give love to that which brings you life.
Thirsty.